Let me tell you about Moo.com. Promo code Drinking Bros. Gonna get you 20% off your first order over there. Did you know there's an online cannabis store that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern you can think of. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. Whether that's the magic mind gummies for deep work and creativity, the PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for the action at every turn. And touch into a full body experience over there. Listen, I love the night-night gummies, as I call them, the sleepy time gummies. I take, right now they're 15 milligrams. I cut it in half, and I take half a night. 15 minutes, dude, you are gone. I've never had anything like it. 15, 20 minutes tops, and I'm out. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days, gas stations, whatever. Mood's functional gummies, though, combine premium federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. Plus, Texas Governor Abbott just said it was all right to get these shipped through the mail. He vetoed the bill down here. Thank God. So order from mood.com today. Use that promo code Drinking Bros for 20% off your first order. Everything ships discreetly right to your front door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the promo code Drinking Bros. So head on over to mood.com. Find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. Don't forget to use the promo code Drinking Bros when you check out to save 20% off your first order. Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with the help of Hims. They provide access to personalized treatments so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Yeah, 3 to 6 months. That's it, kids. Hims offers convenient access to a range of prescription hair loss treatments with ingredients that work, including chews, oral medications, serums, and sprays. Doctor-trusted, clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil can stop hair loss and regrow your hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of your own home. Fill out an intake form, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. The process is 100% online, which means getting started has never been more convenient. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Plus, treatment options start at $35 per month. Hims has helped hundreds of thousands of men get their confidence back with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/drinkingbros. That is hims.com/drinkingbros for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/drinkingbros. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely smoothly and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to AeroHit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Welcome to Drinking Bros Podcast. Look, it's kind of a crazy thing, Dan, that we're able to do this show, talk about people we admire, and then a few weeks later, we're able to actually get them on air. Who do we have today, D'Anthony?
We have Sergeant Kevin Briggs from the California Highway Patrol.
Correct. And you made him Drinking Bro of the Week a few weeks back.
It was about 3 weeks ago, I think, Yeah. September is Suicide Awareness Month. And that's something that really hits home in our community, specifically the veteran and first responder community. And this guy is known as the guardian of the Golden Gate Bridge. And that's because he's personally interdicted probably, 200 or so people trying to commit suicide on the Golden Gate Bridge and stop that from happening.
Really? 200?
Well, I never counted, but I will tell you, I averaged 4 to 6 a month for about 10 years.
Man, the wildest thing to me is, so I watched the documentary. I don't know if you got a chance to see it, about how many people commit suicide off the Golden Gate Bridge. Right. They left cameras running
It's called the bridge, yeah.
Yeah. How long were they running cameras for, a month?
I don't know. I think it was a couple of months, probably.
Yeah.
So you're probably in that and don't even know it, to be honest.
Actually, I was working a swing shift, so most of their stuff was done during the day, day shift hours. And I'm glad I wasn't. I'm not a big fan of that show for a lot of reasons. But
I'm sure, yeah. I mean, they're kind of capitalizing on the tragedy.
Precisely. I've met the producers and the whole thing. And I will tell you, after that show came out, suicides on the bridge went up dramatically.
Really?
Yeah. We have to be very careful about how we talk about suicides in this country.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, what's that old saying? Psychology is more viral than the flu or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, it's a big deal. When it becomes normalized, when it becomes a thing to do, people do it for essentially clout. It's not like really like clout, like internet clout or anything, but it is a way to get recognized and noticed and do something that is in the mainstream. It becomes normalized at that point. So I agree with you. It's definitely important to talk about it.
Sure.
The right way.
Do you remember your first person you talked down?
I do. And I will tell you, as a fairly new officer, I had no training in this, didn't know what I was doing. We're trained as law enforcement to go in and handle situations, calm the chaos. But in this, you know, I walked right up to her and part of me was thinking, okay, she's going to jump. This is a suicide. The other part of me is this a trespasser? Is this some kind of taking a picture? Is this a joke? So I didn't really know what I was walking up into. Like I said, man, I had no training. It was terrible. But I went off of empathy and there was a younger woman over the rail. The rail is only 4 foot tall. She's standing on an I-beam over on the other side. And then it's just one step and 220 feet down. But I spoke with her for half an hour or so, and she did come back over. But I think she had a lot of empathy for me and could see that man, this guy, he's scared and he really doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
Yeah, I'm always curious as to where you start a conversation like that when you know something so immediate could happen. I would be nervous trying to find the words because I'm sure the first two or three sentences are the ones that it's either, you know, they're going or they're not going, and then you're able to reel them in and have a conversation.
Exactly. And that's what we're looking for, to be able to develop some rapport. When I'm out there on these types of incidents, they see the uniform. What I do is I kind of stay back a little bit and I just raise my hand open-handed and say, hey, I'm Kevin. I'm going to personalize everything. And you say, hey, I'm Kevin. Is it okay if I come up and talk with you for a while? So I think by empowering them, giving them that option right from the start, it starts it off on a good note.
That's interesting. I never would have thought of that, actually, to introduce myself first.
Well, I mean, it's hostage negotiation, essentially. Like, that's the same principle as hostage negotiation. You don't want to appear as a threat to somebody, and you don't want to appear like you're trying to control them or make them do something they don't want to do, ever. Like, but you want to give them options at that point, right?
Like,
there are options other than what you're trying to do right now. Here are the options. Pick one of these. And, you know, it's obviously... There's some situations where you just have to go grab somebody and yank their ass out of the way. Like if somebody's standing in front of a train, I think we saw a cop or some civilian do that a couple months ago or something. I don't remember what the situation was, but somebody was trying to suicide by train or some shit.
Right.
And somebody yanked them out of the way. There are some instances like that for the most part. When the transition from the ideation phase to the action phase of the suicidal gesture stuff happens, that's the point of interdiction. And that's probably why you've been so successful, because you understood that from the very beginning.
Well, and there's another part to this is, to me, having done a number of these things, it is so important that, yeah, maybe I can grab that individual. I'm close enough to grab them and maybe we can work on getting them back over. But then what? I'm trying to think long-term here also. If I can get them to come back over voluntarily on their own, man, we made, you know, that's a huge success, because then that shows that they want to live. So that's right. What I try to do. I typically don't grab people. I've seen it done. It can work. Yes. But to me, it's so important, because I think it takes a lot of courage to go over that rail to begin in. Imagine how much courage it takes to come back over that rail and start this other life. You know, it's kind of a rebirth. So imagine the courage it takes to do that. Now, if you have the courage to come back over that rail, I think you have the courage to face life again. And that's what I'm looking for.
With the 200 or so people that you've saved, have any of them come back to you and thanked you years later and said, look, I turned my life around. I owe you a great debt of gratitude. You changed my life, literally.
Since this all started with me retiring and doing these types of things, I have received a couple of emails from folks. But mind you, I didn't keep records on the people. We keep records in the Highway Patrol. But this was over, you know, a good 10 years or so where I did these. One individual I do keep in contact with, and there's a photo of him over the rail, and he and I do speak together. So it's been really cool. But for the mass majority, I don't reach out and contact them. They haven't reached out and contact me. I wish them the very best. I wouldn't know what to say if I reached out, and nor do I have a reason to. I say, hey, remember me? I saved you. And for one, I don't like that term saved. I think I was there on a very dark day for these people.
Yeah, not so much you reaching out to them, but them reaching out to you as to say thank you. And I think the reason why I bring that up, especially in today's world, no one is thanking police officers for anything these days. I just wondered if, you know, when something like that happens and you are this close to killing yourself, to come back from that, if it was one person that had saved me, I would thank them till the end of time of like, hey, my first child was born. I never would have got to see this if it weren't for you. Hey, I got to see, you know, my daughter get married, or, you know, things like that. And that's what I was kind of curious about.
Yeah, it generally doesn't happen. And I totally hear you about the morale. I just spoke with a larger agency up north of me yesterday with a gentleman who I'm going to do some work with for negotiators. And he said their department is at an all-time low for morale, not because of management, but because of what's going on in the world. So you're exactly right. We got to pick these guys up. You know, they got a tough job.
Yeah. And it's, again, saving someone's life is such a huge deal. If you can't get thanked for that, what can you get thanked for as a police officer?
Like, I just, from my perspective, whenever we would come back from deployments or whatever it was, or go to events, people, and then afterwards, you know, when people find out that you did stuff, and this is more prevalent just after the Iraq war died down and not so much now, but people would thank you for your service. I'm like, all you have to do to thank me is live a life worth fighting for. That's it. And I think people, like police officers, yeah, you need a pat. Everybody needs a pat on the back sometimes, for sure. Like, it's good for your psychology to know that you're doing a good job, and that the people that you're serving think you're doing a good job. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, most people, statistically speaking, all the polling shows that the vast majority of people think that cops are doing the right thing most of the time and doing a good job, by the way. Anyways, I think, you know, maybe it's difficult. Maybe he reminds them of that day and they don't want to think about that shit anymore. That's the old person. And now the new person just exists. It's like you said, a rebirth. I think that's probably part of it.
Or embarrassment. Now that we're talking about it, I think you're right. I think there's probably some embarrassment and shame that comes with it of I was the person that was trying to kill myself and how ridiculous that was. So, yeah, it makes sense talking about it out loud. And that's why we wanted to have you on today, was to talk about all of this stuff out loud, because these are conversations that nobody really has.
Right. And I don't want to be a trigger, whether that's sight, smell, sound, whatever that may be. So if they're doing good, man, fantastic. Glad to hear it. You know, we did our job that day. Hopefully we get them to someone who can help them more and for a longer period, you know, a mental health professional. Mm-hmm. So it's fantastic. We get that satisfaction of not only job satisfaction, but just being a human to human, helping out satisfaction. And that's what counts for us.
Yeah, I think that's lost on a lot of people. The idea that soldiers and police officers are not normal human beings in a very abnormal position. You know what I mean? Like, it's the idea of having to be armed in public and make a decision whether to shoot or not in less than 1 second is a lot of stress. And a lot of people, especially in these high intensity drug trafficking areas in the major cities, face that on a daily, if not weekly, or weekly, if not daily basis in a lot of these places, right? The constant stress and anxiety. It's not that we've talked about this with post-traumatic stress before. It's not just the single events that happen that cause post-traumatic stress. Now, there are some cases that would, like with sexual assault and things, but for military people and police officers, typically speaking, it's the long-term exposure to heightened stress, right? Mm-hmm. That's what causes true post-traumatic stress in our communities for the most part. And that's like the idea of that calls into question like how we should be treating these people. You know what I mean? Like if you have a really high performance engine, for example, you keep it oiled, you use the right kind of fuel, you clean it on a regular basis. Like, these people have sacrificed a lot and volunteered to be tools to keep our communities safe. And we treat them like shit for the most part. We treat them like they're our used stuff, not our new stuff. And that's a big fucking problem for me and for a lot of people out there. And I think you're starting to see a lot of blowback with this anti-police sentiment. People are getting pissed off about it now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Case in point, it happened today with, because there's been a lot of celebrities that have been speaking out. Defund the police, which is obviously the worst idea of all time. One of the biggest champions of that in the celebrity world was Alyssa Milano. Alyssa Milano had some problems today at her house. And she called 911, and there was about 30 police officers that showed up to help her today. I'm wondering if she'll post about that tomorrow. This idea that the police are bad in some way has gotten absolutely crazy to me. I don't know if you still follow it as closely since you're out. Do you read the press about the police every day the same way you used to? Or,
you know, I see it, and I talk to the folks who are on the job nowadays. And I hear about it. They go to coffee shops and somebody will buy them a coffee, say, hey, thank you very much. But on the other hand, man, somebody may spit in their coffee. So, you know, things that you never heard of 20, 30 years ago. This is a tough time. People can be very, very ruthless and brutal out there. You know, we have a lot of work to do as a society. We really do.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of which, today they're barricading the city of Louisville.
Yeah.
I don't want to call it a verdict, but
It's a grand jury verdict. Yeah.
Yeah. It's coming down for the Breonna Taylor case that's been widely publicized in the media. And clearly, if they're putting up barricades in front of businesses, they're expecting the worst tonight.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, they're certainly. It seems like the officers are not going to be charged. Otherwise, they wouldn't be taking all of these precautions.
One would think, right?
Right, but who knows? We'll see when we see, I guess. But yeah, it's gonna be nuts up there.
Yeah,
and everywhere probably.
They're even preparing out here, out in California, for that. I talked with some folks yesterday.
Yep.
Who, you know, these things are nationwide now with the news media going on, and do we even know what's real going on out there?
Yeah, because on Twitter, you know, that's obviously very popular to post. Hey, let's go protest, or hey, let's meet up here. You're right. California was on that list today. It was Los Angeles, San Francisco, and I think Seattle and Portland, obviously. Well, but look,
they're just protesting being alive up there.
Yeah, exactly. If your Uber's 2 minutes late, they're going to burn down the city in Seattle these days. So It's a crazy time out there. What do you say to police officers that are just starting out right now?
You're in a whole different atmosphere than when I came on. And mind you, I was in the military and in the Army and then went into corrections. So I worked at San Quentin. So these different thoughts and processes have gone through. But for guys just starting out and first time on the road, you're going to have to deal with a lot. Boy, I would tell you, as soon as you can, learn crisis intervention training. It's being offered all around the United States to officers, CIT. And if you can take a course in active listening skills, it'll behoove you for everything that you do.
I like the word behoove, by the way. That's how I know. I don't need to see your DD-214. That's how I knew you were in the Army back in the day. You know what I mean? Because nobody else on earth uses that fucking word ever, except for dudes that were in the military. That's it.
I've been out of the military a long time.
I know, but it never leaves your head because you have drill sergeants screaming, it'll behoove you to fucking shut up for months on end.
There you go. We are in a whole different realm right now. I'll be honest with you, I would not want to be starting off brand new, but then again, I wouldn't know what I know now.
Right.
So,
yeah, I mean, it's going to be, it'll be interesting to see how these young folks handle it because they don't, like you said, they don't know anything else. So it'll be I assume they'll adapt because people do adapt regardless of what job or industry it is or what kind of person it is. People adapt or they go away. Right. So it'll be interesting to see what happens here. I think anytime you remove incentive for doing a job like that, it becomes problematic because it's a tough job, right? People want to know at the end of the day that all the extra hours they're working and the danger they go through is worth it for their family, not just for them. It's not even about them, because if it was about them, they wouldn't be doing that job in the fucking first place, frankly. Right. They need to know that their family is going to be taken care of, and part of that is money, man. It's just the way it is, and the idea that you're going to defund that means you're going to get less and less professional recruits, which means you're going to have less and less professional police officers, right?
Yeah.
That's just how that works. And that's not the solution to this. I mean, how could it be?
And look what you're going to lose. First, you're going to lose all the outlying community reach resources, and then it's going to work its way in. It's like when you lose weight, you start losing weight at your head and your toes first, and it works into your gut because that's your primary area that you're protecting. So you're going to get rid of all these other things before it actually hits the middle of that police force. The community is going to be, you know, much worse for it. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Are you still living in California right now?
I am. Looking at many other places.
it's really nice in Austin, I'll tell you.
And I tell them I'm not coming to change. I'm coming to adapt. I love small towns. So I will bring nothing of California here. California is a great place. It's just gone a little haywire.
Yeah, the California itself is amazing.
Yeah.
Without all those people there.
Weather is amazing. Look, without all the people, the fires, the taxes.
If you live in
politics, California is amazing.
If you lived where I lived in Oakland, uptown Oakland, I could get to the mountains and go skiing or the beach or wine country or the desert all within about 4 to 6 hours.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, come on, you can't get any better than that. But that's, I mean, people flock there, right? And then.
And then once it sets in, it says, what are you, 13.9% tax rate? I don't even know.
So expensive here. Yeah. The taxes are really, really sunk. And just to register your vehicle, you know, I'm paying over $500 a month just to register, $500 a year just to register a car.
Ooh,
that's funny. I've told this story on the show before, but when I moved from Madison, Wisconsin to Oakland, I just bought a car, and I didn't know this rule. Apparently, this rule exists to keep people from going out of state and buying a car and bringing it back in and not paying sales tax. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. Okay. But I didn't live here before,
right?
I moved here. I just happened to have bought a car 3 months ago. When I came to California, I had to pay the difference to the DMV and property tax.
No way.
Our sales tax from the car.
Well, they consider it your property, and North Carolina is doing that now,
I mean, it's,
too.
It's like, come on, man. Yeah. I had to pay, it was $940 to get my 2010 Ford Escape registered in California.
Escape is a nice vehicle.
Yeah, that's like three payments for that car. Are you kidding me?
Like you said, the weather out here is nice. The territory, the terrain is beautiful.
It is.
And like you said, I can be in Tahoe in 3.5 hours. I can be to the beach in an hour. You know, I got all these different things, but you're going to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly.
You always do.
Exactly. I think one of the reasons you're probably so great at your job is you have a very soothing voice. So when you talk, like I feel safe talking to you, and that doesn't happen to me very much. You know what I'm saying? I'm a large gentleman, and it takes a powerful voice to make me feel safe like this.
Well, thank you. And one of my tricks of the trade and what I teach is I tend to talk fast, too fast a lot of times. So I really focus on slowing down when I'm doing these high-end conversations. And that seems to help. Because if you thought, you know, just imagine, for instance, being over that rail and nothing else for 220 feet down, you're probably going to miss a lot of what someone's telling you. So I try to think of that and really slow down my speech so they can comprehend it and take it all in.
So that's kind of what you're doing now. You're running these CIT. One of my buddies, Borland, is involved in CIT up in, I think, in Virginia somewhere. But yeah, they're all over the country now. And that's one of those things, like you said before, crisis intervention training, where that's the kind of stuff that goes away when you start cutting down the budget of police officers. Ask a police officer how often they've been denied overtime, even though they worked it in their careers. Like DHS had this problem in 2016. So DHS and Secret Service, plainclothes and uniform guys, were doing all this overtime for the election, right? But there's a federal limit on how much money a person can make in the government, right? So they worked all these hours for free, basically.
Oof.
During that election. And that happens to cops all the time. Like, I don't even want to ask you how many times you've worked overtime and never been paid for it, but also, it kind of speaks to your value as a human being, in my opinion, because it wasn't just the standing there and being empathetic. It was the follow-up. One of the things you were known for was following up the people the next day. Like, hey, what are you doing tomorrow? Let's go hang out or whatever like that. That's on your own time. You know,
well,
what
it's
I mean?
Important.
Of course it's important.
And I would tell them, hey, man, you can come back to this bridge. It's known that if we can get people past this crisis, this particular crisis that they're in immediately right now, many times it'll last anywhere from 30 seconds to several hours. If we can get them past that, a lot of times they won't attempt suicide again. But if they did, I say, hey, I just want to get you back over here today. Never lying, never BSing them. And say, if you come back to the bridge sometime and you're not feeling right and you want to have coffee, man, call the office. They'll get a hold of me. I'll meet you down here.
What was the longest somebody was on that bridge that you had to sit there and try to talk them down?
The longest one I had was just about 8 hours, and it was actually on the west side of the bridge.
Oh, really?
Most of these, over 99%, are on the east side, facing the bay towards Alcatraz, because that's where pedestrians are allowed, is on the east side to walk across. Anytime you see people walking, they're on that side. But this individual had gotten over to the west side, facing out towards the ocean, and that's where we conducted this. And it was a very long time. As the only guy I ever tried to grab, and it didn't work because he was out there for so long. He was cold and clammy. You know, that bridge, anybody that's been on it will tell you, it gets nasty out there. Very cold. We get a lot of fog. So I was working with the SO deputy, Marin County SO, Sheriff's Office. And we had it in our head, okay, we're going to reach over and we're going to grab this guy. We reached through the rails and grabbed him, but his skin was so cold and clammy that we just came right off the guy. So he jerked back. He didn't fall. He did wind up coming back over, but it was about 8 hours.
Man, that's crazy.
That's a long time to sit out there in that cold.
Exhausting.
And if he's on the east side, that means traffic shut down to Sausalito and everything, right? I mean, there's a lot of traffic going north towards.
There is. We're actually on this one. We're on the southbound. Going south into the city. So we usually, if you have a car, we'll take a lane. We try not to block the whole bridge.
Right, yeah.
So we will take a lane. But when I'm on the motorcycle, then I don't have to.
Right.
So I can just cruise right down.
So you're the real life Chips then. You're Eric Estrada's. No, who's the other guy?
I'm gonna be honest. He's better looking than John. It's John and Ponch.
What is his name?
Because of the video.
What is his name?
John.
John and Punch, right?
Yeah, it's John and Punch, yeah, brother.
Who is
John?
What's his real name?
Who cares? I don't care what his real name is.
Larry Wilcox. That's
there it is.
Yeah. There you go.
We're big Wilcox fans.
I retired from the Marin area as the motor sergeant. So yeah, that's there you go. Something I always wanted to do, and it was a lot of fun.
How many people on average a year attempt suicide on that bridge?
You know, I just got some numbers. I wrote it on here. I'm going to say 100 and over 150 attempts.
Wow.
Per year.
Oh, here we go. Now, let me give this to you here. So 2018, 31 confirmed suicides.
Fuck.
and 187 interventions.
Wow.
So 200 total then.
So yeah, you're looking at, you know, basically every 2 days somebody's trying to do it off that bridge.
It's about 16 and a half per month.
My God.
Which means basically you personally at that time were interdicting a quarter of those people, which makes sense, I guess.
Well, because you were working then, when I was doing this, prior to 9/11, the tragedy in 9/11, we only had one officer working down there.
Right.
So now we have more. After that tragedy, we put some more folks on there. We actually have people on bicycles down there. By the way, they're the JV squad. Motors are the way to go. JV squad. Got to put that in there.
Yeah, of course.
But then the Golden Gate Bridge hired security guards, and most of them do a very, very good job, too.
Good. I mean, that's a high-stress environment right there, for sure.
So
I'm gonna ask a crazy question. Has anybody survived it?
Yes, there have been a few people.
Are they fucked up? Like, how bad is it? Like,
220 feet is how bad it is. It's like it's basically concrete.
75 miles an hour or so.
Oh my God! Did anybody just walk away from it and just start swimming away? And they're like, "Oh man, you hit the perfect trajectory," or you know, things like that. I always think about it when I'm on a bridge of like, I could make this.
People have jumped, and there was a 14-year-old kid several years ago that did it on a dare when he's out on a class outing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I hate.
Can you imagine doing that on a dare?
No, and I've got two boys right now.
I have two boys also, and you know, it's brutal. You're going to get injured. You will get injured, and I have seen, because of course, getting into this type of work, you're not going to be able to help everybody, and I've had people jump on me, and I've seen them hit. And when all the water clears and all the white foam goes away, they come up, and sometimes they're still alive. But then, because all the water coming at them and they break bones, then they drown.
Right. Yeah, well, there was that one guy.
Did the 14-year-old live?
He did. That's good. But he was messed up.
Well, you know, of course, there was that one guy.
We got to get to folks long before they get to that bridge. We really do.
For sure, yeah.
We are doing it, but we're losing still in this country over 48,000 people a year. So
right. Well, I mean, if police officers are the ones that are interdicting those things, then it's too late at that point, in my opinion. I mean, it's not too late. Obviously, you guys have had great success, but for the process to be working correctly, that's way too late in the process for the actual action to be happening.
Exactly. Couldn't say that better. Yeah. That's perfect. I want to tape record that and put that into my talk.
Well, it'll be on YouTube tonight, so you can scrap it.
But it's right.
It is, yeah.
And then it's like when I do presentations, I tell them when these folks are over the rail, man, this is way late in the process. We need to get to them long before they get up to this stage 4 cancer of a bridge at times.
Right.
That's exactly what I say.
And if you've ever studied, like if you've ever done any kind of security work or military work at all, or if you've ever done any kind of like micro expression analysis, you understand that emotions don't just happen. They build slowly. It may seem like they happen really quickly.
Right.
But even with anger, there's three or four different like pre-fight indicators usually that you can see on people: clenched hands, taking an aggressive posture, their eyes widen, they start to sweat. There's all kinds of different things you can see that happen before somebody's about to do something violent. You know what I mean? Particularly something that's unexpectedly violent. Now, it's the same thing with any psychological principle, and there are signs for each one of these people. People become adept at hiding it, but almost everyone I've ever heard of that killed themselves that I knew personally, and between Jared and I and some of our other friends, we've got, you know, probably in total at this point, 24 friends that have killed themselves amongst our little group. And looking back on it in retrospect, you can always see the signs. Like if you look at it then, and we're not good at recognizing those signs. And I think especially in the veteran community, I think we're afraid to face that demon on our own sometimes. So going out and helping somebody else with it, like exposes us to what he was talking about before, the trigger. You know what I mean? Like maybe seeing him again, somebody that he helped get off the bridge, sees him again, and it reminds him of that day, and they go into a spiral, right?
Right.
I think a lot of veterans are afraid of that, frankly. I don't think anybody's talking about that shit. Like, I feel like people are desperate to avoid thinking about that.
Yeah, and I've had 8 friends of mine that I personally knew die all by the same manner of suicide, of hanging for some reason. And I don't know why. A friend of mine was trying to look into it, and he was doing some studies. Maybe it was the age It seems to be this mid-30s, late-30s age that's, that they're doing it. A lot of them had young kids, which was surprising, and they were just okay leaving their families. In your experience, is there an age range or a job or something you can look for where you're like, these people are more susceptible? I mean, obviously, military veterans.
Well, men in general have a much higher frequency of suicide than women do.
Why is that, you think?
White males is the typical one out of the whole thing. And then it varies from year to year, but generally 49% to 51% use a weapon. Guns are a big deal. And I would never advocate anything with the Second Amendment. Come on. I'm looking to buy some new guns.
Yeah, of course. Well, you got to get out of California for, well, no, you got the CR, not CR. It's HR 218 or whatever. You can carry a gun anywhere you want for the rest of your life. Yeah.
I think I can now own a squirt gun with lemonade in it.
Oh shit.
Well, that's an advancement.
Yeah, you got to get one of those flamethrowers that Elon Musk sells. That's what you really need.
There we go. Yeah.
Not a flamethrower. Absolutely. Yeah,
it's called not a flamethrower, by the way, for legal purposes.
For legal purposes, yeah. Yeah. So white males, that's the group. What about the age range?
And, you know, typically 45-ish in that. We are seeing a lot more seniors, and we are seeing a lot more kids, adolescents. Because of the social media.
Social media, yeah. I just watched a documentary called The Social Dilemma on Netflix, and I would highly recommend it. And there was a scene where a girl she looked like she was 12 years old on Instagram. She's going through filters, trying to make herself look perfect. And then the comments start rolling in where her ears were sticking out from behind her hair, and they were calling her Dumbo and other things. And like, yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because social media, the pressure now for kids, and in particular the comments, that makes sense to me where that number is getting higher, because look, man, we didn't have to do that when we were growing up, Dan. I mean, I can't imagine going through it now.
Well, I mean, we didn't, because we're not in one of those demographics that typically gets picked on. You know what I mean? And that's something that I was keenly aware of, because I come from an abusive household. So when I went to school, I was keenly aware of that. Like, you could see the signs of somebody that's not doing well because other people are not treating them well when you've been through shit like that before, right? And that still to this day is one of the things that makes me the most angry. People preying on, it's the reason I joined the military in the first place. Anybody preying on somebody weaker than them, you're a piece of shit, and I'm going to come get you. You know what I mean? And that's just how I always thought about it. And then the, you know, 9/11 happened. I'm like, oh shit, well, here's my opportunity to do that in a real way. It didn't really work out that way because of politics and all that shit. But I mean, you know, that's the fundamental drive for a lot of people. And I think it's when in society, we're talking about toxic masculinity all the time. That is real masculinity, is using your strength to protect other people, right? Whether it be intellectual strength or empathy, there's a lot of different types of strength. It's not all fucking biceps and fucking quads and shit. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on there. Mostly what strength is the will to put other people in front of you.
Yeah, is that what made you want to join the military?
Right out of high school. Didn't know what I wanted to do, but after doing a bunch of research, I go, you know what? This looks really cool. This looks like something and I actually thought about staying in and going to college during that time and being an officer. But when I was in Germany in 83, I was diagnosed with cancer, testicular cancer. So
shit.
God, how old were you then?
I was 20 years old.
Oh,
they
shit.
Flew back, landed back at SF, or not at SFO, but at Travis Air Force Base on December 5th, my birthday. So my big thought was, landing here on my birth, turned 21 at Travis Air Force Base. And I thought, you know, well, at least if I die, then I'm glad I'm home.
Yeah, well, I mean, clearly you survived, and obviously your boy survives, because you got two kids out of it. Man, what's that like at 20 years old, testicular cancer?
Oh, and back then, this was 1983. Nobody talked about it. We didn't talk about cancer much. Testicular cancer? I never told anybody about it for decades. I told them I had stomach cancer because I got a big scar in my abdomen, sternum all the way down. And it was from a lymphadenectomy where they take out lymph nodes. And they took out over 40 of mine, and over 35 of those were cancerous. So I would just tell people I had stomach cancer because it's a big hit on your manhood, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But as going through depression and heart issues and head issues, hitting the head type of things. You know, I went through all this stuff, and then finally I just came out and said everything when I started talking. I want to give people the truth. This is what happened to me, and this is how depression hit me. And I'm the guy that was in the military, worked at San Quentin, was a motor cop, did all this stuff. we never showed a weakness. And because I didn't and talk about it, boy, did I suffer.
That had to have helped you on the job, though. Going through it yourself and going through that type of depression, that had to have helped you once you got in that position to help other people who are depressed.
I think it did, but I didn't compare situations because I didn't want to do that. I don't think it's right, because every time I talk to someone, it's always about them. And even though I had all these things that I was involved in, I didn't bring that up because I wanted to make sure this was not the Kevin Briggs show. It's about that individual. But if they said something like, you don't know what it's like to have cancer. Well, I do. And I will tell you many, many times, commonalities create comfort. So we can talk about that. And then the more we can chat and the longer we can stretch this out, the better chance I have of influencing that behavioral change.
Yeah, and that's why I asked, because, you know, Dan and I do that in podcasts all the time where we try to find some commonalities with people. Right. Some people are afraid to open up. You're not at all. You're one of the best in the biz. I'm surprised you don't have a podcast.
They keep pushing me, but I'm better on this side of it. I know my limits.
Well, you just need a good host then, and you're the color guy. That's what you need.
Yeah. Are you a sports fan living up by San Fran?
I am.
I
don't like what's going on right now, I will tell you.
Who's your team? Is it were you a Raiders or a 49ers guy?
I was the Raiders when I was growing up, but I changed over to the Niners. But back in the day, it certainly was the Raiders.
Might be time to switch back.
Yeah, it might be time to switch back. I mean, the Raiders are in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. They played in the new stadium last night, but the 49ers lost everyone in their last game. Garoppolo's down. Bosa's
out. Might come back this week, but Mostert and Bosa are probably out for the year, I think.
Yeah, I don't think they're getting back to the Super Bowl at all. What about baseball? Are you a Giants fan or an A's fan?
Well, I do like the Giants. Mm. I did go to a number of A's games a few years back, but man, things have gone just a different path with sports guys. I wish they could get away from the politics and all the nonsense and just get back to playing the game.
Yeah, it's true. One of our good buddies, Aubrey Huff, who I'm sure you're familiar with, he's been on the show a bunch of times. He says the same thing. Like, he's personally a very conservative guy, but he always, whenever anybody is talking about politics as an like a current athlete, he's like, why are you talking about this? Talk about the game that just happened.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, on your off time, maybe go help some people and just keep your mouth shut about it, because that's what real help is. You're not just trying to chase clout, I guess. I don't know.
It's gonna continue to happen. I mean, even in the game last night, because I was watching the Raiders last night, just curious to see what their new stadium was like. It's in all the end zones, you know. And racism and everything else. And you're just like, all right, cool,
I mean, that's
man.
My real problem with that is not the words on the pitch or the field. It's the fact that it's a platitude. It's meaningless. Right. What does that mean, end racism?
Yeah.
Like, that would be like him just wearing a T-shirt all these years that said end suicide, but he never actually talked to anybody.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's nonsense. It's absolutely, it costs you $0 and zero effort to do that. And to me, that's meaningless. And it's not just meaningless. You're a major organization. If you really wanted to do something about this issue, you could. You really could. You could use your money, your $15 billion a year in profit that is untaxed, by the way. You could use that money to start fucking businesses and get careers and education for people that need it to get themselves out of poverty, because we know that's the number one predictor of crime. You could do that instead of fucking just sitting outside talking about it all the time and putting it on the field and wearing people's names on your hat. Like, that's not the way to solve it. We've shown that.
Yeah, but everybody thinks that it is, and that's the problem.
No, they don't. They don't think that's the way to solve it. They think that's the way to capitalize on it. That's the problem.
I you wonder, right?
I know for a fact that is. They're either really stupid, because these answers are very simple.
I lean towards stupid.
They may be very stupid, but the people in power are not stupid. They know exactly what they're doing. These politicians know exactly what they're doing. These CEOs and all these other stuff that are trying to capitalize on, they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course they do. All they do is market their product for a living. They know exactly what they're doing.
I know, and right now we've got to market our products for a living, because we get some sponsors who pay for the show to be on the air, and I apologize. First and foremost is ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. Best in the biz, D'Anthony.
It is, yeah.
30% off if you're a member of the military, a first responder, a teacher, or work in the government. If you're a regular dum-dum like myself, you get 25% off. And right now, you get two free pillows when you order a mattress at ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. As always, they've got a 36-month pay-as-you-go program, no interest, at ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. So you can go ahead and skate on over there and get yourself a nice mattress.
Yeah, for like $30 a month, basically.
It's great.
I mean, it's ridiculous how cheap
it
is.
Yeah.
I've never seen a company do 3 years. Like, there are furniture companies that did it back in the day because their volume is so high that that makes sense for them and a lifetime value of a customer, because usually the customers come back and buy more stuff later. I get it. And I'm jealous, but it's definitely the same. And I know that for a fact because I've purchased several of them now and a bunch of pillows and an adjustable base and then a headboard. And like, I've bought so much shit from them. So it's definitely true.
Yeah.
But I've never seen a company go 3 years with no interest.
Crazy.
For something that costs like $800 to $1,500.
How do they know the credit scores? You know what I'm saying?
There's an app that does all of it now.
Is there really?
Yes, dude.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Look at that. Next up, we got buyraycon.com/ drinking bros.
Those new, look, I Ooh. Like, you know, I'm one of the few adult men that can wear white tennis shoes, sneakers, yes. without getting them dirty.
Yeah.
I'm pretty successful at it. I love how it pops. The new white E25s, they look great. They're sleek.
Best.
They're very pretty.
In the biz.
They're also loud.
As wireless headphones go. I'm sure you're listening to a lot of Cardi B these days.
Mm.
If you are, look.
Are you talking about Sergeant Briggs or the community at large?
Sergeant Briggs. Sergeant Briggs, I'm looking at you, my man.
I hate country music, okay? Sure.
I'm looking at you. I know you've got WAP on repeat.
Yep.
In your Raycon headphones, and these are the best in the biz, wireless. They charge and they last up to 6 hours in a little tiny case. About as big as my this keychain right here.
It is, It's smaller than the cases of the competitors for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like it's way smaller, and the charge is actually an hour longer than everybody else. I don't know how they did that. Probably Ray J is working his magic on stuff.
Who knows?
I think he might be a wizard.
It could be. What I know is you can go to buyraycon.com/drinkingbros today, and you get 15% off, knocks it down to about $65. That is the best price you will find for wireless headphones. You need to go and get these things today. That is buyraycon.com/drinkingbros. Last but not least, who do we got, Dan?
Oh, we got Duke Cannon. They've got some new stuff going on, too.
Yeah, they do. Duke Cannon has got a pumpkin spice soap right now, because today's the first day of fall, Dan.
Yeah, they sent some to us.
Yeah.
I haven't got it yet.
And it smells. I've got it in my house. Oh. It smells delightful. And I'm gonna tell you this. It is the best scent on a man's body that will attract strange women. Are you married, Mr. Briggs?
A girlfriend of a very long time.
There we go.
Yeah. How old is she? 28, 29?
Just a little bit up. Not much.
Not much.
Not much. You're damn right.
What is she? Oh, she'll kill me if I tell you. I'm 57. She's 45. She's on the patrol, actually.
Oh, she's still active?
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Good. She has 4 years left. She's a sergeant.
Nice.
Wow.
Two sergeants in the same family.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Duke Cannon loves first responders and military.
They do. They do. They donate some of their proceeds at the end of the year to them every single year. But if you put this pumpkin spice on your body, lady comes home, when the missus comes home, it's fall season. Nothing attracts the ladies more than a little pumpkin spice.
And they've also got this. They're building kits on there now, which is what I like, because I like it's all scents for different types of products that all go together, like from hair stuff to like solid cologne to the soap, everything else.
Yeah,
this one's called Frontier 40, and it's like an outdoorsy kind of dude thing. You get 4 big ass bricks of soap. It's a big ass brick of soap.
Yep.
And I'm not editorializing. That is the name of the product.
That is the name of the product. And it goes in a sleeve too. So you can just wash
yourself. Oh, yeah.
And it's the best.
Then you get four different scents in there. It's campfire, fresh cut pine, leaf and leather, and midnight swim. And the purpose of this is to get you interested in the product, right?
Yeah.
Not interested in the product. It's to introduce you to the product so you know which one of those flavors you like.
Yeah.
And you start buying that, right? Because they have subscription services just like Black Rifle does and all this other shit. Speaking of Black Rifle, whenever I looked at Duke Cannon's their board to see who all their charity stuff is with, it's like them and Black Rifle, them and Black Rifle, them and Black Rifle all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they're involved in so much of the same stuff. I can't believe we haven't met them until this past year.
Me neither. We just had the CEO on, great guy.
Yeah.
And that's the best body wash and soap on the planet. You guys were the ones that actually hit us up and asked them to be a sponsor.
Yep.
They were grateful enough and agreed to it. So you can go to DukeCannon.com.
It's a new
promo code.
It's DrinkingBros10 now.
DrinkingBros10.
For 10% off, and you get free shipping on any order over $20 as well. All your orders are going to be over $20. So,
correct. And
you can also go to Target if you don't buy stuff online. I would recommend getting it
shipped to your house
because when it comes from there, it's fresher.
Yeah,
to be honest. And you're talking about, like, soap has fat in it. I don't know if you know how it's live and fat, right? We've all seen Fight Club, right? Yeah. So there's fat in it. There's a shelf life to soap, right? So you want to get it directly from the source. That's what I do. I don't ever buy it in the store anymore.
Me neither. Get it shipped to your house. DukeCannon.com, Drinking Bros 10. Is that 10% off? What do we got there? 10%
off. And free shipping over 20
bucks. Free shipping over 20 bucks. So you're married to a sergeant. That's crazy. Did you guys meet on the job?
And do you guys call each other sergeant?
Yeah. Sergeant? Sergeant?
Depends on where we are.
Oh, shit.
Ooh.
This got real sexy over here.
Yeah, it did. Does it get crazy when cops are dating other cops? Like, do the handcuffs come out?
I would have never. It kind of broke all my rules of dating another cop. Don't ever do that. I would tell myself all through my process of law enforcement, but I did. It's been quite a number of years now. We're still boyfriend, girlfriend, but we lived together for a long time. So everything's going smooth. You know, she talks about marriage once in a while. I go, is there a tax deal with this or?
Yeah.
Brass bones here. What's going on?
Her retirement becomes your retirement.
That's so
why,
true.
Why
yeah.
not just go ahead and pop the question?
But in California, you have to be married for 10 years to get access to any retirement or pension stuff. By the way, I'm just saying. I learned this when Kobe fucking cheated on his wife.
Yeah. Of course.
Right.
How long you guys been together?
I'm more than 10. Well, more than.
Then you're. That's it. It's common law at that point, right?
So, I don't think California has common law marriage, do they?
Well, we did do that domestic partnership.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah, you can do that.
California thing. It's a mess.
And you know they're going to tax you for the next 10 years after you move too. So get ready for that.
There's no getting out of this year. I'm stuck.
It's not.
I'm stuck in the relationship. Stuck in the taxes.
Yeah. Stuck in the taxes. So are you fully retired right now? Or do you work another job right now?
I do a couple of things. I mentor at my local schools. So I do that. And then I have my own business, Pivotal Points, to where I travel and do presentations on mental health, quality of life, negotiating skills, and stuff like this.
You're a better human than Dan and I. And we need this. Like once a week, we chat with people like yourself to help us feel better. Because you're talking to a couple of dirtbags right now. And we're grateful that you're on the show and put up with these shenanigans.
You really did. You make it easy.
Well,
where do you go and speak at? Do you go to high schools and things like that?
I go to high schools. I just did this big company in England. We did it, of course, virtual, but Moody's.
Moody's. They're actually speaking of in the United States and England, the same thing is prevalent. About 68 to 70% of all suicides are white males of varying ages. Right, it's the same thing in England for some reason. I mean, I guess we're from the same general gene pools for the most part.
Yeah, I thought England was just all white people. Is it not?
No, a lot of folks there.
Learn something new every day. Don't
at any rate. Yeah, you know? They have a big problem with suicide as well, and it's. You know, it's interesting that they hired an American to come over there and speak about this issue.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
You know what? Maybe they just saw other work that I did and knew I would be speaking about it. So they reached out. And then last week I was in Washington, D.C. I went to the FBI headquarters and I did two college campuses online. So and last week it's a lot of fun. I did several Jewish community centers. A lot of fun. Really cool.
Yeah, I used to do security for a lot of those around actually this time of year because it's the High Holy Holidays are happening right now, right? So it's like every September I was down in like Palo Alto at these big giant Jewish community centers walking around with an assault rifle everywhere, right?
No kidding.
Yeah, because they were super worried about getting attacked, obviously, because people are crazy.
Yeah, people are crazy. Man, what an amazing life you've led. It's pretty incredible that you do this a living. Because I think of how many lives you've actually touched, and it's rare, man. I mean, it's rare that you meet somebody who's doing this for a living, and you're truly helping people, literally all over the world.
It's been very humbling, very satisfying, but also very humbling. But also, you see people in some of their darkest times, and it breaks your heart too. So.
Yeah, I bet. What about your children? Are they in college? Are they all grown up now?
Both of them. One's high school.
Okay.
And then the other one is in college right now, too. He's 17 and 19, two boys.
What would you tell your boys, because I've got two boys, what would you tell them if they wanted to become police officers?
Hmm. That's a tough one.
Right?
I would, if they really wanted to, okay, we're going to talk for a while. Let me show you what it's like, and then we're going to go talk to some of my friends who are still on the job. There's a lot of easier ways to make a buck. And realize that you probably have a much better chance of coming home.
Yeah, but there's no chance, regardless of what the circumstances were at any point, that you were going to be anything other than a cop and exactly the kind of cop that you were, frankly. Like, some people are just cut out for the shit that they do, and there's nothing you could do. Yeah,
I like what I do.
I mean, there's no version of you. I can't imagine a version of you that isn't doing this. So maybe one of them's like that, but if they're just doing it because you did it, that's the wrong answer today, right?
Find something you like.
Yeah.
I've never said, man, I don't care if you, whatever it is, you know, whatever you want to just work hard and be good at it. There's so many people out there that are just getting by and trying to work the system and get everything for free. I'm so against that. Work hard, whatever I get. Even one of my boys, he wants to play professional soccer. I said, man, if you get out there and you make it, fantastic. I'm gonna support you all the way. If you go over to England, he's been looking at Spain and different places. I don't want anything from you. If you make billions, I don't care. I don't want a dime. If I can't get it myself, then I'm not going to get it. And that's what I want my boys to take. Work hard and, you know, get what you can get.
Does he have the talent for it? I'm currently coaching my son's soccer team right now, and I can tell you unequivocally, he does not have the talent to do that. And if he came to me and said, Dad, I want to play soccer overseas, I would say, son, you couldn't play in the MLS over here today. You are that terrible at soccer, and you've got to choose something else. I love you with all my heart, but you were awful at this. Are you that type of dad? Would you tell your kids that?
This guy's pretty good. I would tell you he's been to China playing soccer. He's been playing soccer for many, many years. He was actually accepted into UC Davis for Division I soccer.
Oh, there you go. That's great. Yeah, my kid definitely won't do that.
He's five. He's five years old.
He's six, but you know. I'm telling you, you know. I've coached for 2 years now. I've been a soccer coach for 2 years. It's my second year in a row. And it's great because it's exercise.
So what, all of a sudden you're Bill Belichick of soccer? You know that this five-year-old or six-year-old is not going to – there's no way.
I don't know if you heard this story. Have you coached your kids?
No, not for soccer. I didn't know anything about soccer.
Okay, but have you coached them in any other sport?
Not as the coach, but as a dad.
Gotcha. So sure. I coached my kids' soccer teams the last 2 years, right? I not to brag, and not to pat myself on the back, which I'm going to. No big deal. I guided them with my my coaching skills all the way to the championship game, and I looked at myself as a young Urban Meyer. Who's the soccer coach over there, Giorgio? That's the most famous.
Yeah.
Who?
It was probably Arsene Wenger before, but he's retired now.
Sure. I looked at myself as a young Arsene Wenger and guided them all the way to the championship. When I lost, I was devastated. At a five-year-old soccer championship, like I felt like I had let the whole team down. You know what I'm saying? Because it was about me. But I will say this, because if you think it's not, the other coach from the other team who came up to me during the trophy ceremony, he was like, man, I'm going to have the best weekend ever. And like, wow. Whispered it right in my ear. And it was a nice moment between dads where you're laughing about that stuff. But we were able to sit down and have an honest conversation after that of like, do you think any of these kids will make it? Because the parents come up and they tell you, you know, my kid is great or he should be playing more and blah, 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 blah. And you're like, dude, they're 6 years old. Like, no, they're not that great. And none of them are going to be professional soccer players. You can tell, I think, when you see certain kids play sports, if they're going to be great.
I think you can tell if they're going to be able or not, but not necessarily if they're going to be great. Like, muscles develop differently for people over time, but hand-eye coordination in soccer is a big thing.
Yes.
If they don't have that, then I don't know if you can really train that, to be honest.
No. So needless to say, my kid's not going to be playing, but if yours is going to UC Davis on a soccer scholarship, that's great. Then he's got a shot at it.
We'll see. You know, one of his coaches who was a brutal coach, but he loved the kids, but he trained them hard. He said, you won't find a kid in Marin that's going to make it because they don't have the drive and desire like they do in Mexico or some other place, you know, because Marin, man, is very, very wealthy, except for me. There's a lot of money here. And these kids, they don't have the drive that they would need.
You know, that's true.
I encourage them to do it, man. You do whatever you want to do as long as it's legal.
Yeah.
And keep going. Drive on.
Well, I will say this. Like, it's not like you were a prince or something like that, right? So they at least grew up with parents who were hardworking.
Wait, do you mean Prince, the singer-songwriter, or a prince? Like,
either or is fine. Yeah. Two princes here before you. That's what I said. Now, you can use any of those princes as examples, but what I'm saying is when you're a hardworking guy, you know, first responder, a cop, like, there's a better shot that he'll have a better work ethic than the rest of those kids up there. I've got some relatives up around that area, so I know what you're talking about. They're all lazy as shit up there.
There is some of that. There's some folks that are very, very wealthy, and that gets passed on to the kids. There's a whole ton of entitlement here. Mm.
Yeah, drinking wine at a young age, like little Frenchies.
Affluenza, they
call it.
That's a real thing. That's what they said about that kid from Stanford, that like, he got off a sexual assault charge because he had affluenza. Like, his parents didn't raise him right. They were too rich to raise him properly, so he gets a pass. That was kind of the...
I understand it. When you're eating lobster all day and drinking champagne, you don't really have time to raise your kids properly.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's about you at that point. So, you know.
Well, we don't have that here.
No, we ate Kraft mac and cheese out of the box. We didn't even put water in it. We just ate it straight out of the box.
Yeah.
Why not?
It's the best way to eat it.
I agree. I like the crunch.
Yeah. So after your wife retires, is that where you guys are going to get on down the road and get out of there?
Girlfriend.
I got to see what's going on with the boys, but we've been looking. I want to get into hunting and fishing a little more. I used to do a lot of it. I'm actually going deer hunting next week, even though California is on fire. We have some private property we got access to. So I want to get more into that, but got to make sure to see what's going on with the boys.
You know what we should do? We should bring you out to Crash Landing Outdoors. Our buddy Archie Bradley, he's the closer for the Cincinnati Reds now. He was the closer for the Diamondbacks, but here in just north of here in Oklahoma, he's got a place called Crash Landing Outdoors, and he takes, like, veterans, first responders out into the woods and hunts with them and shit. We haven't got a chance to go up there yet because of all this stupid nonsense that's going on. Yeah. We'll be up there this fall. As soon as baseball season is over, we'll be up there.
Yeah. And the one thing about those fires is, you know, boom, as soon as you kill it, you're cooking it, you know, seconds later. Yeah. So you're able to eat it pretty quickly, one would imagine.
Yeah.
Now's the point in the show we get to the drinking bro of the week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you to become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the drinking bro of the week to?
You know, I'm going to say the guy who is kind of motivated me to do this. A lot of times it's Kevin Berthia. Have you seen the picture of the guy over the rail?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He lives in Memphis or something, or you guys were in Memphis or something like that, right? Like doing some kind of presentation.
We've done some talks together. Yeah. So Kevin Berthia, who I'm going to talk about. And, you know, he was over the rail, darkest day of his life. And like I do with everybody, I asked him when he came back over that rail, what did I do that was good, man? What did I do that helped the situation? And what did I do that wasn't so good? And all he says was, you listened, you let me speak, and you listened. And that's what we've been talking about this whole time, getting somebody before they get up there. So, you know, he's an inspiration to a lot of people, including myself.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, Giorgio, if you wouldn't mind popping up a picture of him, that would be great. And we'll put that on screen there.
Yeah, and if you search Google for Kevin Briggs and Kevin Berthia, you'll find some talks that each one of them have done and ones they've done together and stuff like that. Like, he's got a TED talk with almost 7 million views at this point.
Really?
Yeah. And it's funny that I never meet anybody that knows who you are. I'm like, you've heard of this guy, right? And they're like, I don't think so. I'm like,
but they all know that picture.
They all know that picture. Yeah.
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 It's gotta be strange. So, before we let you get out of here, if someone is at home, who is thinking about committing suicide, what is your best advice for them to do at a moment like this?
You know, if they're really contemplating it, please seek help. There's a lot of things going on in your head. I understand it. If you need some assistance, call 1-800-273-TALK. That's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline.
8255, I believe, is the number.
Right.
Yeah.
And then a lot of adolescents, we know they don't like to talk on the phone, but they'll text. So there's a crisis text line, 741-741. Or if you know somebody who's suicidal, you can use those also. They're not there just for the folks who are suicidal. You can call them and get some information.
That's awesome. And if you're out there, if you're a listener or a fan of Dan and Jared and Matt and Evan, that's why Drinking Bros podcasts and the community was created was so that you would never drink alone. Jared Taylor initially founded all of this because, you know, 22 veterans were committing suicide per day. And he wanted a place where no matter where you were, whatever city in the United States, you could find someone who was in your community to talk to and have a drink with. So feel free to join Drinking Bros. Just Drinking Bros, the community on Facebook. It is a private group. So whatever you say in there,
whether
will not be public.
Yeah, whether you listen to the show or not, if this is the first time you've ever listened and you never plan on listening again, I would recommend going to that group.
Mm-hmm. And almost every city is represented in the United States. We've got over 800 subgroups. Mm-hmm. So you can find the city that you're in. We're in Austin, Texas. Dan and I are both in that group as well. But if you look, if you're in California or Marin County, you can find somebody that is close by you, and they'll be more than happy to sit with you, even if you don't drink, and just hear your stories and tell you why you should live. We greatly appreciate your time today and you being on the show. Again, it is unbelievably rare that we get to just shout out people's names on the show and then they show up right a few weeks later. That is one of the true gifts of this job, is that we get to sit down with men like you. You're an inspiring guy, and we greatly appreciate your time tonight.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for having me, and thank you for everything you're doing. Absolutely spectacular what you folks are doing. Highly appreciate it. I will steer more people your direction.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very much. For D'Anthony D'Anthony Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. We are the Drinking Bros. Good night, everyone.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.